This is an MUT Radio podcast.
Hello, I'm Dr. Amalia Gondis-Malka. Welcome to Womanity, Woman in Unity, the show that celebrates women's milestone achievements in their struggle for liberation, self-emancipation, human rights, democracy, and much more. Joining us today is marine scientist Dr. Lara Atkinson. She serves with SEON Egakasini, the offshore marine research node, where she focuses on establishing monitoring tools and protocols for the offshore benthic environment, specifically epifaunal invertebrates, which are animals living on the surface of the seabed, and anthropogenic impacts. She also serves as an honorary research associate with the University of Cape Town, as well as Nelson Mandela University, and she commits much of her time to capacity development through part-time lecturing, intern monitoring, postgraduate student supervision, and participation in various education outreach activities. Thank you. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Amalia. That's great. Wonderful intro. Sounds like I do a lot.
It sounds like you do a lot of very complicated things.
Not really too complicated at all. It's fairly straightforward, actually.
We're very privileged to have you on the show. And in the 12 years of doing this show, you were the first marine scientist to feature. So thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you for inviting me. I can't believe I'm the first marine scientist. We're going to have to up those numbers for your radio show.
Absolutely. On that vein, can you tell us what inspired you to pursue a career in offshore marine science?
Well, I was thinking about that, actually, and marine documentaries, believe it or not. Marine documentaries as a child. I did grow up in Johannesburg, so we did have regular family holidays to the sea, to the ocean, but I was always absolutely mesmerized and captivated by those marine documentaries that used to screen on TV and still do. And ironically enough, that's kind of the past month of my life has been back involved with some of these documentary makings. So it's been very exciting for me.
I can only imagine. And, you know, as a child, I was always fascinated with National Geographic. It was like this, opening to completely different worlds. So, yes, I concur with you on looking at documentaries as inspiration. So going from Johannesburg, where there is no sea, what were some of the steps that you took to enter into the field?
Well, I knew very early on, from the age of 12, I knew that marine science was what I wanted to do. I had found a book called The Living Shores, which is written by Professor George Branch and his wife, Margot Branch, on a shelf in a family holiday home that we had rented. And I knew I needed to do marine science. And in that little book, The Living Shores, there's a very small little paragraph that explains what do you do if you want to become a marine biologist. And I wrote all of that out, because back in those days, we didn't have cell phones, we didn't have means to capture this, but I rewrote that section. And it said that you need to study a Bachelor of Science degree at a university. So in order to get into studying a Bachelor of Science degree, you have to have physics, maths on what was then the higher grade. And I also included biology and geography in my school curriculum to ensure that I had all of the tools available to get into a university, which I then did. And I got my Bachelor of Science degree and proceeded onwards with several of the postgraduate degrees, finishing off with a PhD degree.
And qualifications are one thing, but choice of field and area and thinking about the working space is a completely different kettle of fish.
Absolutely, absolutely. And what I can also say is that following the academic science avenue is not the only way to get involved and be working in marine science. We have so many people working in marine science, spanning from the technical aspect, I cannot overemphasize enough how important the technical component of marine science is. And we've got a huge team of technicians who support marine science. And without those technical expertise in the field, we will be nothing. We will not be able to collect any of the data we so desperately need. A lot of women, in fact, are going into marine technical aspects. So it's not prohibitive. The technical side, mapping, even computer software development, going out in and into the new artificial intelligence, absolutely critical and far behind in marine science. So we really need those skills to come through and feature in and share their passion with the marine world. And another very, very amazing area to delve into marine science is the education outreach. We at SEON run a huge program of education outreach, and it is one of the very exciting parts to be involved in engaging with the learners at high school level or even primary school level and teaching them about marine science.
It sounds very multidisciplinary, and you've touched on aspects of the technical side of things, mapping, software development, artificial intelligence, which I'd like to delve into a little more as we continue in the conversation. Realistically, what are some of the types of opportunities available for women?
Pretty much anything. I don't believe that there's any constraints on women in this field. I think that if you are passionate enough about what you love, which is why we all do this. We love this field of research. And I don't really believe that there are any constraints. We do sometimes come up against a little bit of male domination or some personalities. It's really not, I don't even know if it's a gender thing at all anymore. I think it's just a personality thing who may feel that women don't have as much to contribute or prefer to engage with men colleagues because they're more comfortable in that, but that doesn't really tend to stop any of us anymore. I think that there's definitely many areas that women and anyone wanting to be involved in marine science can go into. It's all about where you see yourself featuring, what your personal strengths are. And I think that there's, so many different options out there.
When I was preparing for our conversation, I'd very, very cursory preparation. I saw that we have in South Africa 3,000 kilometers of coastline, that the world effectively is covered by just over 70% of water. So I would imagine that there are boundless opportunities in working in this space.
They are. There's incredible opportunities. And what I can emphasize is that Africa is quite a hotspot. South Africa is known to have extremely high marine biodiversity because of where we are located. We are sitting at that southern tip of Africa, and we've got the warm Agulhas Current coming from the equator down past our east coast. And we've got the cold water moving up from the polar region, from the Southern Ocean, past our western margin. And where those two water bodies combine, there's this huge mixing of water. And so the physical environment in South Africa's marine space is so dynamic and so diverse that inevitably we host some of the highest marine biodiversity in the world. I think we're only third in line after New Zealand and Antarctica. So it's really an exciting space to be in. There's the other aspect of it is that a lot of it is actually undiscovered or unexplored. And there are so many opportunities to get involved in that, that there's just open doors for people wanting to get involved in marine discovery. There's so much still that we are needing to understand in Africa's marine space.
And looking towards the exploration side of things, you're part of the Around Africa expedition, which is an endorsed action plan, an endorsed action program of the United Nations Ocean Decade Framework, which goes up to 2030. Can you tell us more about OceanX and OceanQuest Around Africa expedition?
Sure, it was very exciting. I was very fortunate to be on the first science leg of this expedition. And essentially what it is that OceanX have been established since 2012, 2013, and are a very well-established ocean exploration, bringing the ocean back into the hearts of society. They do a lot of there's a large emphasis on media. They do want to use a lot of that technology to film underwater and to explore underwater and to bring that amazing incredible seascapes to the people. So OceanX have got a very well-established, very excellent blueprint, should I say, for bringing marine exploration to the people. Ocean Quest are quite newly established and are emerging, and they partnered with OceanX. Both are philanthropic nonprofit organizations, and they Ocean Quest don't yet have a vessel, whereas OceanX have got the vessel Ocean Explorer. So, with us being in the Ocean Decade and with the United Nations Ocean Decade framework, there's a huge emphasis on oceans around the world. And these two excellent philanthropic organizations partnered to basically do a Around Africa expedition, culminating in Nice in France in the middle of the year in June, where there's going to be a huge Ocean Decade Congress, United Nations Ocean Congress will be held. And it's an excellent opportunity for them to have explored around Africa and then present the findings at this Congress. It's very exciting for Africa, certainly.
Exciting for Africa, and it's exciting for you. What an
Very
experience.
incredible experience indeed, for sure.
So, where has the route taken you so far, and are you doing the full excursion?
No, luckily I'm not doing the full excursion. The full excursion is 4 months long, and other than the OceanX team who are on board their vessel, nobody's going to be on board for the entire duration, the visiting scientists, that is. We started our exploration or expedition in Comores at the end of January. We set sail from Comores on the 30th of January, and then we sailed down through the Mozambique Channel, quite close to the Madagascan coastline, actually. Well, not the coastline, but in Madagascan waters, where we had permission to be continuing to map through the Madagascan waters from the ministry. And then we sailed south of Madagascar, quite far south of Madagascar, to an area that is sitting on a raised underwater mountain range, I guess you could say, to explore seamounts. And we, in that area, the Madagascan Ridge, we explored two seamounts in that area, and then we sailed across towards South Africa, and outside of South Africa, EEZ. We explored a little bit more on another seamount, and then we came around into Cape Town. That was the first science leg, and that was approximately 3.5 weeks in duration. And then from there, the South African and East African team got off the vessel, and a new team from West Africa and Namibia got on the vessel, and they sailed up to Namibia, and now they are heading out to Cape Verde Islands. And they're going to do more seamount exploration, followed by a stop in Canary Islands. And thereafter, they are heading into a bit of a dry dock period before they go across to France. And that's the Around Africa expedition.
Amazing thing to be part of. Tell us about some of your responsibilities and roles in this expedition.
So I was appointed on to the expedition as being the lead African scientist, and that means that I really get to do a lot of coordination. A lot of coordination. I did put forward the science proposal, and having a look, the way that that science proposal evolved was really having a look at what equipment the Ocean Explorer has on board, and then optimizing the use of that equipment in the region where we were going to be working. So we did focus on biodiversity, and there was a strong emphasis on seamounts. And then my role really was to bring together a team of African researchers. I very strongly believe that when we are traversing areas, past countries, those people must be involved in the expedition. So I spent quite a lot of time trying to coordinate scientists, marine scientists, and we had quite a strong emphasis also on early career scientists, because we feel that those are the ones that are going to be leading this work into the future. So we had early career scientists from Mozambique, Madagascar, Kenya, Tanzania, Comores, and South Africa. So we had six, seven different countries that were represented with their scientists joining and participating. And some of those scientists also had their own research that they were trying to pursue. For example, the one researcher from Mozambique is working on soft corals. So she contacted me and said, can we also sample and explore and document the soft corals during this expedition? And I said, of course we can, because she's working on it. So that was kind of my role, just to make sure that everybody worked together, gelled together, and did the work that we had set out to do with everyone participating and learning.
Wonderfully diverse team, fantastic representation across the continent. And I love the way you were able to fuse in different scientists' agendas on top of the core expedition, because you're in that environment anyway, and creating those opportunities.
Absolutely. It's very important that when you're at sea, you must make use of every single possible opportunity, because it's very costly to get out there. So when you're there, you really take every opportunity that you can.
So in the exploration space, you spoke about biodiversity being key, as well as seamounts. And I'd read that you'd explored Walter's Shoal and the Africana 2 seamount. Please, can you tell us what it feels like to study these deep sea ecosystems, and also what makes them so unique?
Well, it's very interesting. They were two very different ecosystems, firstly. Walter's Shoal is quite an interesting one. It comes up very, very shallow in the deep ocean. It comes to just within 15 meters of the surface. So it is a really, it sits on top of a ridge, and then it comes up to very shallow below the sea surface. So it is a very interesting one, because it actually receives sunlight. Sometimes you can even see some seaweed, types of red algae growing on the top of Walter's Shoal, which is very unique for a seamount. Seamounts are traditionally deep mountains, deep underwater. And that is more what Africana seamount looked like, is that it's very deep. It's got a base of 4,500 meters coming up to 2,500 meters below the surface, compared to Walter's Shoal, where the base was around 600-700 meters coming up to 15 meters. So these contrasting ecosystems, contrasting habitats, was really fascinating to see. Just to backtrack a little bit, seamounts are really important around in the global ocean health. They support biodiversity. They are known to be hotspots because of their rocky, generally hard features that then support animals that live on there that are sedentary animals. So they tend to be these hotspots of biodiversity in a great big vastness of open ocean space. And these seamounts also influence ocean currents. They're really important in larval transport, because larvae will transport from one seamount to a next seamount, possibly occupying the following seamount. So they're really important features in a big vastness. It's kind of like oases in a desert. But they are becoming increasingly threatened with climate change, changing water properties, changing water dynamics, temperatures, that kind of stuff. And then there's also the human activities. Often seamounts are hotspots of aggregations for fish, and they can become targeted by fishing communities, especially in the high seas areas where there's no formal legislation around managing the fisheries. So they're important areas to study, and it was incredible. It was my first exposure to truly deep sea ecosystems, and I could also go on to tell you about diving in a submersible to see these features, if you would like to hear more.
I think you can, and if you found anything that you weren't expecting.
Well, it is interesting. It's a double-edged sword, I'm afraid. So we, some of us, not everybody in the team, but some of us did get an opportunity to go in the submersible at Walter Shoal. The Ocean Explorer has two submersibles on board. They are three-manned submersible, so we could get some of the scientists going down and having a look at the seascape in front of you. And that was a truly incredible experience. I had to have a little bit of convincing to go 500 meters down under in a little glass dome. It's not actually glass, it's acrylic. And but I don't regret it one bit. It was truly life-changing, inspiring. Most of us who did get the opportunity are still trying to process exactly what we did and how we experienced it. But it is an incredible, incredible opportunity to be able to sit warm, comfortable, even with your lunch packed and under your seat, and actually see that seascape in front of you, similar to like if you were walking or going on a hike and you can see the landscape. Very few opportune people have that opportunity to see a deep sea seascape and see the interactions among the fish and the currents. And it was truly incredible to have that opportunity. And things that we discovered, you asked, things that we saw. Well, one of the things that I wasn't expecting, but that is simply a fact, is that Walter Shoal is still under recovery from fishing impact. Walter Shoal was quite heavily fished from the 1960s to the early 2000s, even. And there's definitely evidence that this community is still having maybe even light fishing activity happening, but it is not recovered. The communities living there are not what we might have expected in size and abundance. We would have hoped that after, but it has only been 6 years since the benthic protection zone was implemented by the regional fisheries management organization in the area. But these kinds of animals that occupy seamounts take very long to grow. They're long, slow-growing, long-lived species. So we have hope. There is definitely signs of recovery and signs of species coming back, but it's certainly going to take a bit longer before we can see that real pre-fished ecosystem.
The sad thing about what you're saying is that it's human impact. And how do we get people who are potentially less educated or not thinking about sustainability? How do we get them to change their practices so that they don't impact negatively on the environment?
That is a quite a difficult one. As you will know, Africa is often faced with poverty, and poverty, it's a difficult balance to recognize the value of the environment when you are hungry. But it is obviously very important because without a healthy ecosystem, no matter what you try and take from it, eventually that ecosystem will crash and stop providing the food that you are reliant on. So I think it is really all about education. It is about developing a passion and an understanding for ocean ecosystems. It's kind of like that saying that, you can't love something you don't know. So let's share, let's educate, let's help humanity, let's help people understand and know the ocean space. And I do believe that there will be more love and passion and respect for the ocean developed through that. So, I mean, all of these programs, Ocean Explorer, are doing an incredible job about bringing that imagery, the imagery, because there's nothing more that works than a picture. A picture speaks a thousand words. So, Ocean X are very dedicated to bringing that imagery back to people. And this opportunity that we've had around Africa and the first science leg that we've just finished really has got incredible footage that has been shared with all of us. So those scientists who were with me on this expedition have taken that imagery back to their countries and they are sharing it with their communities. Just alone today, I've had reaching out from two of my amazing colleagues, one from Tanzania and one from Kenya, both asking me for follow-up engagements to help them share their experiences with the broader community. And that is what this is all about. It's the butterfly effect. And we've started it. And I'm very proud that my team are taking it forward and sharing with their communities. So we can only but hope into the future.
There's so many layers to this project, apart from thinking about the pure scientific dynamic of why you went there in the first place, but looking at the documentary aspects that are going to happen, the ripple effects of that going back into the communities, and for them to be able to see what the world looks like under the sea, and have a greater appreciation for it.
And importantly, it is under their ocean. That is what has made it ownership, a sense of ownership. It is within their waters. And that's what's very exciting for Africa.
We had an interview recently when we were talking about, I think it was the Rural African Women's Assembly or the Rural Assembly of African Women. And one of the topics from that conversation was about being guardians of the land, guardians of seed, because we were in consideration of GMOs. And I think we need some guardians of the seed too.
Absolutely. I can't express it better than that. But what I can say is that this team of African researchers that were with me are incredibly passionate about their love for the ocean. And I truly believe that they are going to start fostering more and more love and guardianship for the ocean space. And I do hope that I'm going to be able to partner with them and walk alongside them into the future with this as long as I can.
The last thing that I want to ask you about the expedition is we live in a world which has been radically transformed by artificial intelligence. How have you seen its impact in the research that you did when you were doing your monitoring and mapping?
That's a very good question, actually, in that Ocean X have just are just busy launching a platform with using artificial intelligence to help us process the hours and hours of video footage that we get from these expeditions. Because the way these expeditions work is that when you have a good weather day, a good weather window, and you are on your site and you have your science days, you launch that ROV, the remotely operated vehicle. You launch that at before 8 in the morning, and that tool, that giant camera that is busy monitoring and tracking along the ocean, only comes back on deck around 5 o'clock. That is almost 8 hours of video footage, along with combined the submersibles, each filming imagery at during the same time. That is a huge amount of imagery for us to process. And to process that, we need to go very carefully, slowly through all that footage and basically record everything we are seeing. So you can imagine the amount of time this could take. And using artificial intelligence, you can train models to automatically annotate footage as it is being collected. And Ocean X being ahead of the game as they are with their technology, they actually have a team who are not at sea but are based in land, and they are busy developing a model that is going to be used to train the software to automatically identify a large majority of the animals we are seeing in the footage. And that's going to speed up the work incredibly. They aren't there yet, and they are going to be relying on me and my team to help them train those models. But we are all committed to the cause because we know the backlog that the vast amount and hours of imagery can cause. So we're wanting to get that processed as soon as possible, and using some artificial intelligence in this positive way is certainly going to help the process.
Wow, fantastic. So you've got a lot of plans mapped out for yourself on route.
Absolutely. You can't just go to sea and then not do anything with everything you've collected. So we've got huge plans. We've got a lot of students who are already busy working on it, like Bibiana from Mozambique. She is working up those soft corals. Already this week, I had some feedback from one of our lab people who are working at SIAB in Makanda. And she says, oh, she's already extracting the DNA from some of these samples, and the team are rearing to go and very excited. We are going to have to look for a little bit of funding. We would like to find some student bursaries to support some new students onto this work. And yeah, but we are, You can't let it sit. We have to work on it actively during the rest of this year and the following year.
Dr. Atkinson, one of your passions is about developing students and building this pipeline of talent. And you've already mentioned the fact that women are well represented in as marine scientists. But what I wanted to ask you now was, what are the opportunities from a work point of view? Because it's great having a degree and a qualification, and you're passionate about your studies, but the reality is we still need to make a living.
Absolutely. And that is one of the challenges. Marine science is not notoriously known as a well-paid career where you can support your family and live comfortably into retirement. So it is a challenge. There's also not that many jobs available. I believe that there's enough work, but the jobs are not being prioritized. A lot of our government departments have had massive cuts in their posts. And I do believe that the government needs to look into that. There's a lot of people coming through that are qualified, but are unable to find work in marine science. So that is a concern. I know sometimes I do feel, sometimes you do wonder why are we training up all these people when they can't find jobs? But even when I cast back to when I was studying and my mom kept saying, "You're never going to get a job," but you do, you do. You have to not give up. You have to work really hard. You have to always put yourself at the front, put your hand up, volunteer, grow your knowledge, work on that CV, and look for the job opportunities that come, even if the job you're applying for is not necessarily your perfect job. Sometimes you've just got to get in there and start. And there is no perfect job. So make the most of it. Take your moments of absolute joy and glee. And then the rest of it is quite a hard slog. So it's hard work, but it's very rewarding work. And that's what I could recommend for any young people wanting to go into marine science. Don't give up on it if that is really what you want to do. You will find a way.
And you don't need to stay in your own borders.
You don't need to stay in your own borders. I am incredibly patriotic, though, so I won't advocate for anyone to leave our country. I believe that South Africa has got the best marine science opportunities, at least in terms of the biodiversity. And our ocean is one of the best oceans to study at the moment. We've got so much to still discover. So I wouldn't advocate for leaving our borders. I do believe in collaboration. I do believe in working together across a with developed nations. We are doing more and more of that every day, and it does open up more opportunities. There's also other African countries that are offering good opportunities for other nationalities. But I do think the world is working more towards a collaboration rather than a removal into another country.
I was just trying to think that people shouldn't just be blindsided if they can't see an opportunity in their immediate environment to not give up.
Never, don't give up. If it is something that you're wanting to do, there are ways to find a way to stay in it. And it doesn't always mean, as I say, finding that passion that you thought. As I've said to a lot of people, marine biology or marine research is not about swimming with dolphins and turtles. It's a hard work and there's a lot to be done. And we really do encourage and need those passionate people who are prepared to put in the hard work.
Turning towards a more personal note as we come to the last part of today's conversation, one question I ask all my guests is about some of the factors that they consider have contributed to their success. Please tell us what have been some of your factors.
Well, a lot of hard work. Support from my family. Even though my mom was always very worried about where were you going to find work, is this really the right field for you? She never ever discouraged me or stopped me from doing it. Having the support of my family, the stable, unwavering, endless support is immense for me. I wouldn't be where I am without them. And they were still, they actually, I brought my mom and dad to Cape Town to help with the looking after the family while I was away. And so when I got back off the ship, there they were. And they just could not have been more supportive to this opportunity that came in my career. So having that background is really has helped me a huge amount, I won't lie. But there are also ways I didn't get bursaries all the way. I had to work and pay back debt, like a lot of people have to do. So it's just about never giving up and keeping focused on what you want to be doing, because we spend majority of our lives working in a career. So do what you really love, because it feels a lot less like a job, even if there are hardships to get there. And just keep going for it, because you know it will be rewarding.
That's a great message. And lastly, as we close out today's conversation, could you share a few words of inspiration or wisdom with girls and women that are listening to us?
I just want to say to all the women out there, marine science is actually a field that needs women. It needs a woman's touch. It needs a woman's care and passion. And if you are vaguely interested in marine science, the high school, South African high school curriculum has a marine science component now. And put your hands up, ask your teachers, find out about that marine science. It's a subject that you can take in high school that is focused on marine science, and it is across the country. So even if you are living in Johannesburg, find out about marine science. It is available for each and every one of you. If you are prepared to work hard, marine science is your space. And we would welcome any learners or young women out there who are wanting to find out more. With Seon have platforms that can help provide information and avenues to achieving that. So I would just say, just don't give up on your dreams. Please find out if you can follow your dreams. It's so important for your lives.
Fantastic message. Very important message to follow your dreams. Thank you so much for joining us.
That's a pleasure. I hope I have managed to reach some audience out there, and look forward to new recruits into marine science. Please, I hope I've managed to achieve that. Thank you for your time.
You have been listening to Womanity, Woman in Unity, and we have been talking to Dr. Lara Atkinson, who is an offshore marine scientist with Seon Igagasini.
This is an MUT Radio podcast.